This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. It's Friday, which means that our doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, is in the studio with me. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Dr. George, hello.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hi.
I'm very good. You know, the sun is shining. There's no rain.
For once.
For once. And then, well, a little bit of haze they were talking about, but it's not too bad overall. I think we're going to get lots of people joining in this conversation because today's topic is heart, heart, heart.
Yes, it is. To accompany us on this hot, hot, hot journey, we have Kannan Murugasan, Ultraman triathlete, sports event host, personal trainer, basically a life in athletics, is it fair to say?
Yeah, I've been doing this for 15 years, so not a professional, but on a personal level, I've done some extra ultra stuff, so yeah.
What is the ultra stuff that you... Do you want to elaborate a little bit? Because, you know, I look at this with envy. Sort of what exactly is ultra stuff and
well,
the Ironman?
Well, put it this way. The Ironman is a 3.8-kilometer swim, 180-kilometer bike and 42-kilometer run, which is quite an amazing feat in a day. But Ultraman is about 2.5 times more the distance. It's 3 days.
Right.
So 10K swim, 420 bike and 84-kilometer run on the third day with a cut-off time as well. So I'm the only Malaysian. I've done it twice so far. It took me so.
Before we go further, I must ask you, why?
I do ask myself still, why did I do it? Especially halfway through the 84-kilometer run out in the nowhere, you'll be like asking yourself a lot of times, why?
Why?
Yes.
Ask yourself why on the second occasion, right? Okay, like, you know. And you've been doing this for how long now?
For about 15 years.
15 years.
Yes. And in the fitness industry also.
Right.
And it just keeps my passion going in the fitness industry. And of course, it's going to relate to what we're going to talk about today as well.
Absolutely, so. Because we need your 15 years of experience to talk about this.
That's right. I mean, we have Kannan here, and because it is, of course, the Olympics, you can't escape it right now. Every day, every headline, it's all about what happens once every 4 years. Mm. And, you know, we have Olympics, we have Dr. George Lee, we have Olympics, we have Dr. George Lee. Where on this Venn diagram is there an overlap? Well, the answer is this. The International Olympic Committee distributed 450,000 condoms to athletes competing in this year's Rio Summer Games. And that is 3 times more than what was distributed at the 2012 London Games. So what about the claim then that sex before a competition reduces the player's performance? This is a long-held belief that somehow sex and sports shouldn't mix. It stems back to the ancient Greeks who founded the Olympics. So it's been going on for quite some time now. But 400 and almost 500,000 condoms
is
no
joke.
That's
yes,
it
lot.
Is.
It's a lot.
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks for all the athletes. I mean, yeah, I haven't done the math. But
they actually found the guy on NineGag. There's a picture of the guy was distributing the condom. The best job in the world, I think.
Right.
Something
okay.
like that. I don't know.
Because you're just among... Well, I mean, the Olympic Village, if you think about it, is full of people at the peak of their physical fitness who are ready maybe to let off some steam because they've been training for a very long time to arrive at this point. So today's topic is about sex and athletic performance. And before we get to you, Kannan, and I ask you some personal questions, Dr. George, do you hear about this a lot?
Well, yes. I mean, the thing is that in our practice, we get obviously on the medical side of things, obviously someone who had an operation, you were asked after the operation, when can I engage in sexual activities again? I think that is very fair questions, especially somebody who recently had a heart disease or, you know, myocardial infarction, that sort of thing. Lots and lots of researches has been done in order to make sure patients are safe. However, when we're in a situation like this, you know, you get one group of coaches who say to them, look, no sex within 24, 48 hours, 3 days, 3 weeks before the actual games itself. And other groups of people who say, look, 2 hours beforehand, you have to have sex because that relaxes you. And therefore, that will really kind of like hit, you know, a really sensitive question. I think we would like Klang Valley to join in the conversation. Do you believe that, you know, sex before any major event that is very important for these individuals, obviously all the athletes, all the Olympians needs to concentrate, is good or bad for you? I think that will be a good kind of like talking points for the Klang Valley.
And that number to call if you'd like to weigh in. And again, that question is, do you think that sex before an important event is a good or a bad thing? Give us a call. You don't have to be an Olympian. It could be anything. That phone number
could be before an exam.
Exactly. We
a
aren't
job
all,
interview.
We are certainly not all Olympians. That's so right. Feel free to weigh in.
One Olympian here.
Yeah. Well, that number near is 0377109000. You can also text 0162019000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Kanan, I mean, you are a competitive triathlete. And as you mentioned, you've done what is, in my view, crazy things twice now. What is training like leading up to a major competition? I mean, we're talking about the Olympics, but being an Ultraman is also no small feat.
Yeah, especially the Ultraman, especially the last one, basically sacrificed about 6 months of, you know, Malaysian food, sleeping early, no social life, you know, no alcohol. But of course, there's some things that you can't. and the thing with sacrifice, yes, a lot of sacrifice, actually.
Complete discipline for six months to build up to that particular day. Yes.
In fact, for an Ultraman, by right, you need more than 9 months. But because I'm in the fitness industry itself, constantly, I have the base. So I just have to peak at about 6 to 4 months.
Mm. Yeah.
How much stress do you feel leading up to this? I mean, it's one thing to say, yeah, I can give it up. But I think even for the regular person, anybody who's ever been on a diet or any sort of fitness regime will know that after a while, giving things up starts to weigh on you. You know, you start to look at things and you start to feel it a bit.
Yes, especially when I'm out there on my own. It's kind of hard. But the thing is, mental is very important. So I put it that I enjoy doing this, like, you know, cycling, swimming and running. I just love it. Of course, the stress of the competition is there. But I just turn around to say that I really enjoy this, although it's not true all the time. But
I mean, you're building up 6 months of training for the moments of your glory, right? You know, and during that time, do you think that aggression, the testosterone, drive, the momentum is something that's going to carry you forward, or do you think is that relaxations afterwards that actually going to say, ah, you know, I've trained all this time, and then now it is going to be, you know, I'm going to take it with my stride, because that's a whole thing, right? Yes, I mean, what we're discussing today is that whether you, you know, because the scientific study shows that if you do not have intimacy, then you build up that testosterone, the anger, this frustration, and you're hoping that will take you forward. Yes. But sometimes that can be counterproductive.
Yes.
On the other hand, the people who argue against it to say that, well, when you have sexual intimacy, you're relaxed, you have got your wife in the Olympic village, and then so you actually can take it with your stride because you train all your life for this already.
Yes. Well, to be frank with you guys, you know, especially for long distance, every 4 days I need to release, to be frank with you guys. I mean, it's just, it's not easy. And I don't know, maybe you can explain to me, but if I don't do anything, you know, that for about a week, when I finally do release it, the volume is just so much more.
Yeah. Well, actually, most of the time, it's not just, I mean, for men, obviously, and women, because we're going to talk about women
we
as well.
Are, yes. We I are,
yes. I
would like
to know because
it is not just the volume, because what the aggression itself is the testosterone.
Yes.
You know, there's a testosterone that drives a man. And then, you know, one of the athletes that were featured in the CNN article actually says that for women who are in boxing, competitions, the whole idea is that that whole testosterone, you know, the androgen actually will drive them. Yeah. So what you're describing is volume in terms of, like, you know, reproductive product. But the thing is that is the testosterone that is what we're talking about.
Okay.
So you're talking about, I mean, you are in your early 30s or your 40, early 20s?
40, early
40s,
actually.
Early 40s? Oh, okay, right, okay. Right.
It's a compliment.
It's the benefit of exercise. Okay, right. For someone who doesn't exercise, you age faster. Okay, anyway, so what I'm trying to say is that, you know, for somebody who is in their 30s and 40s, actually twice a week of sexual intimacy actually is normal because that is driven by the natural testosterone.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you find that holding back on that natural testosterone results in more aggression? You know, or perhaps let's speak more generally. It doesn't have to be sexual, but does frustration lead to better athletic performance, in your opinion?
No. Can you repeat that?
Yeah, no, so like, you know, frustration. So, you know, you coop up all that frustration.
It builds up.
So is that good for you or is that counterproductive?
It's not good.
For you, it's counterproductive. I think it depends on individuals, right? For you, you'll find that a little bit too much of this tension is destructive. Okay, that's interesting.
Well, what about women? I mean, we've been talking about men and everything we talk about is in terms of men. Testosterone, frustrations, all these different things.
That's one thing I want to know because for me personally, I mean, I sleep better after. So it sort of helps me after a long day or especially when you're stressed. So I would like to know about, what about female? I mean, do they get tired?
Well, I mean, actually, tiredness is defined differently because at the end of the day, it is that
relaxation.
Because, you know, whenever the act of sex is actually supposed to be rewarding, evolutionally you're speaking, you know, for the whole idea of passing on your own genetic material, and that's rewarding and you want to do it again. And therefore, you will have release of endorphin in your body and then during the climax and in order to help you to remember, it is a rewarding experience. It's an enjoyable experience, and we'll relax. And that is the whole idea of, you know, that part of relaxation. But some people treat that relaxation as tiredness because
as fatigue.
Because whenever you feel like you need to just rest and sleep, and then some people actually treat that as fatigue. So it is open to interpretation. It is completely subjective.
So my word was actually not tired then, is the other word.
Yes, relaxation. That's right.
We're talking today about the long-held idea that sex and sports should not mix, that for Olympians participating right now, they should maybe, you know, just step back a little bit, which is in contrast to the 450,000 condoms that have been distributed in the Rio Summer Games. And we're asking you, you don't have to be an Olympian and you don't have to use your real name. You don't have to tell us a real story. But we are asking you, in your opinion, does sex before a major event help or hinder? Give us a call. That number is 03-7710-9000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin with our doctor in the house, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in with me. Also joining us today is Kanan Murugasan, ultraman triathlete and personal trainer. And we're talking about we're basically talking about sex and athletic performance because there's been a long-held idea that this shouldn't mix for a bunch of different reasons. Some people say that it, you know, it depletes your energy. Other people say, well, it relaxes you and it's a good thing. So we are waiting to hear from you, even if it's just say, wow, 500,000 condoms were given in the Rio Summer Games.
Well, I think I have a comment to make about that. I mean, second all, 500,000 condoms.
Less than, to be fair, but close.
450,000. I really think it's a good campaign for safe sex as well. I think that is something that is really commendable because, you know, in 1988, the first Seoul Olympics, you know, we that was the height of the kind of like HIV and then the, you know, spread of HIV. And that was introduced and that was publicized because that's the first time that that was publicized. And then went to the Winter Olympics, you know, in 1994, again, that sort of numbers. But from 2000 until today, the number has gone up from 90,000 to 150,000 in London, and then now we're looking at 450,000.
You know what I'm interested in? I'm interested in whether this is a realistic response to what they've seen in the past. You know, did people run out of condoms, you know, during this 2-week period?
Or they're just taking for the freebies and take it back to their own countries.
Just the branding then.
Well, whatever it is actually is doing a good thing because on one hand, it is actually promoting safe sex, which is something extremely important. And then on the other hand, actually it breaks down taboo for something for us to talk about.
I think so. Also the fact that I think we shouldn't forget how young many of these Olympians are, and that this is probably the kind of education that they should be having in terms of sexual intercourse. I mean, if they are going to be sort of running free after finally completing their event, you know, free from their parents, free from their trainers, this is something to keep in mind. Now, when we talk about this then, how strenuous is sex? Because if we say, so we've examined that idea of tiredness and talked about how it can be, relaxation and tiredness can be a little bit confusing. But overall, Is sex strenuous? I mean, does it burn a lot of calories?
Well, I mean, I began the interview by talking about, you know, how much exertions a patient should undergo whenever they worry about sexual intercourse. You know, obviously, for somebody who just had a bypass, or, for example, somebody who just had a myocardial infarction, and then we need to know how much can they do. Let's say we will ask them to do several flights of stairs, and then whether they can take it. And then those will be the good way of measuring it. If you're actually measuring specifically in terms of how many kilocalories, you're only looking at 200 to 300 kilocalories for one experience. You know, and many people say you're tired out because of that activity. In reality, is that if an Ultraman is doing that, you're not talking about 200 kilocalories. You're talking about
calories, yes.
Tens of thousands of calories. So in comparison, something like that doesn't tire you out. And in fact, there are randomized controlled studies. There are studies that I'm going to talk about later on just to prove that it is something that is not, in comparison, something that is not too strenuous.
On that note, I mean, when we talk about calories, so 200 to 300 calories, for instance, Kanan,
how much is that?
What is that? I mean, so let's compare that to another activity. So if I run for an hour, for example.
That would be an average about 600 calories.
Okay,
so half an hour,
half an hour,
right? Okay, on several flights of stairs, or you know, on the bike, stationary bike, which we talked about last week, and then you know, it's probably about 15 minutes or 20 minutes or so,
And we are talking quite a lot about the psychological benefits of this, you know, because it's not all physical, of course. We're also talking about all the feel good hormones that you might get. How important is the mental game to an athlete? How important is mental strength?
The make or break, you know, no matter how much physical training that you do, at the end of the day, it's all about mental. Be it on a long distance or even short distance, because the mind can play tricks. Mm. It can say, I can't do this, and that's it, you're gone.
Yeah. So, it's just like, you know, like the night before, you're so anxious, and then suddenly have that moment of, self-doubt, and then that's it. That's the end of your 6 months, 6 years training.
Yes, I've had friends who are like so okay until the night before, and then the morning before the race, and they're like, no, I don't know, I forgot how to swim.
Yeah, it's cold feet, really, isn't it?
So it is very, very, very important. Mental is the most important thing.
Is that common?
It's very common for anyone, even, having done 10 Ironmans. If I go to a start line, coming to a radio station, even though I've been doing MCing in front of thousands of people, I still get anxious coming into the studio.
Oh, that I can tell you. I can tell you I get very anxious.
Which is pretty normal for anyone, I guess.
How do you harness all that nervous energy? You know, you have all those nerves at the start race, the night before. How do you gather all that and make it useful?
For me, I think about the joy of, it's all about passion, passion of swim, bike, run. So that's how I put it in a different perspective. It's not about race. Of course, if I'm in the Olympics, it will be totally different.
So you're goal-orientated. I mean, for you, just like, you know, that finishing line, the glory, holding things in your hand, you know, that reward is what you say, okay, I'll shut out all my tiredness and so my concentration is just focused on that.
Yes.
So is that useful? Is that the advice you would give people when they are training for such important, you know, event in their life?
Yes.
We have a question now from Rama. Good afternoon, Rama.
Hi, Rama.
Hi, guys.
Yeah.
Good Friday afternoon.
All right. Okay. Interesting subject. Yeah.
Without being explicit and also too dramatic.
Okay.
I would like to draw a parallel between the sexual act and the participation of an event.
Sure.
Okay. To me, when you look at the sexual act, it is the unification of the mind and body with only one aim in achieving a climax, and then there's a whole rush of adrenaline and endorphins and everything, and then the whole act ends up in a complete. Now, there is a lot of anticipation also thrown in the beginning.
Yes.
So the same thing happens when you're going to about to take part in an event or something like that. You're like a planned hand grenade with the pin removed and the clip thrown away, and there you are about to explode in seconds. You know, that's a small instant rush of adrenaline, endorphins, everything else in your body achieving the same single aim.
Indeed.
But in the short act, there is a thing called a recovery period, obviously.
Yes.
Saying is, my opinion is, if the sexual act is carried out too close where the recovery does not occur, it will affect the athletic performance, of course.
True.
And I think it works also vice versa.
Okay, very good. Okay.
Thank you
for that contribution.
I would totally agree with that. In fact, personally, I would refrain from anything a day before, a night before. In fact, a big race like an Ironman or Ultraman, a week before, I'll try to refrain. For whatever reason it is, I'll just try to refrain.
All right. Okay.
And is that just a belief? You know,
it could be a belief. It could be a belief. And also, I think, again, I mean, it gives you a good sleep. It releases stress. But as I said, personally, I use a different method of just relaxing my mind if I could. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Okay. You know, for those of us who were born in the 60s, well, which you're not, right? It was like 1976 movie, like the Rocky, right? Okay. And I know Mickey, the trainers, famously said that, you know, women weaken legs, you know, for the boxers, right? Okay. So do you kind of like say that it depends on the interval before that, you know, so like, you know, if the interval is, it fits your recovery period, then it shouldn't weaken legs. Yes. So how do you decide, you know, how long beforehand? Because I'm going to tell you a study that has been conducted in order to establish that recovery period. Because what, you know, the earlier caller actually said that, you know, there is a refractory period. If you look at physiologically, that recovery period is 20 minutes in most men. Right. Okay.
20 minutes.
That's right. Oh, yeah, okay. 20 minutes. So the rollover and the cigarette and that sort of thing is 20 minutes. Right. Okay. Right. The recovery period.
Difference in age.
Well, actually, it is true. You are absolutely right. You know, when somebody is 17, it's about 7 minutes, and it's like whenever you're 45, it's about 7 years. Right. Right. Okay. Just joking, but you know, on average, it's about 20 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. This is a dark future for me.
Right. Okay. So I mean, you know, so you would still think that something like that, you still need to concentrate rather than actually let loose and let too relax.
Yes. And my dad used to say that, you know, he'd put it in an indirect way because we're not open about topics like this.
All right.
He said, you know, keep it. It's like what it was said in the article about that there's something magic about it. You need to keep that, you want to be strong. Well, I think maybe since young, since my teens, I've listened to that. So I have that in my mind. Maybe.
Well, only Chinese parents tell them that, you know, there's a quota. You know, it's in your life, right? There's a quota of sexual experience you have. Once you finish it, then that's it, right? So, you know, in fact, there's a saying that 精精人亡, it means like, you know, when you reach a certain things and it's all finished, you die. And it's like, you know, I think that is quite threatening. That's quite, you know, make people feel guilty.
But
about
do you hear that a lot? So in your practice, what part are you doing, Dr. Josh, to dispel this myth?
You need to tell them, like, because sometimes people have infertility problems, for example, right? You know, the first thing that you would do is that maybe in my youth, I have overused it. You know, sometimes people have erectile dysfunction, any form of sexual dysfunction. It's always blamed in your past. And in fact, that is that sort of guilt that is instilled. And it takes a lot of persuasions to say that, look, actually, that's not true. And then, because otherwise you constantly have that self-doubt and self-guilt, and it's very difficult to dissociate from.
I do think about that sometimes.
Yes, right. It's a very Asian thing to do that.
Well, that's also something that I'm curious to hear about from people. You know, do you still have that kind of very Asian entanglement of guilt and, you know, this belief that maybe it's just fundamentally wrong, you know, that you should just kind of hold on to it, so to speak.
On one hand, you have this mentality of you don't use it, you lose it. On the other hand, you say use it too much, you lose it. That's a lose-lose situation here.
Well, weigh in. We are talking today about sex and athletic performance, but also just sex before sort of any major event in your life. We'd like to hear from you whether or not, A, you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, and B, also, do you think that there is still kind of a little bit of guilt that isn't medically sound, you know, in Dr. George's practice, as he described earlier. The number to call, 03-77-109-000. You can also text 0162-019-000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a text about a woman, which is nice. A listener said, Don Fraser, one of Australia's best ever Olympic swimmers, always maintained that sex before a race gave her the edge over all the other girls.
Mm, that's right. I mean, it's interesting also that, you know, that is always, you know, because of taboo, obviously you're talking about, you know, female sexual health, and then for athletes to come out to talk about it, I think it is a very good thing for this gender equality.
Kanan, I mean, in your work in the fitness industry, mm-hmm. Is it, how important is it to acknowledge that athletes are individuals? Because, you know, what might work for Dawn Fraser, for instance, might not work for the swimmer next to her, might not work for the swimmer in the other lane. They might find that it does not make them the best. It tires them out.
Quite recently, I've used more of psychology, I think. It's all in the mind. How you think is what you are. So I would say, you know, like, as I said earlier, what my dad said is stuck to me for until now. But if a coach says something to the athlete, then the athlete will listen to the coach. Mm. So it could be that, unless if they do their own research. So
yeah, I like the way that you said that, you know, because, you know, at the moment, many obviously coaches will give advice to their different team, you know, participants and so on and so forth. Because currently the IOC actually came up with a specific kind of like a advice for their athletes or Olympians. It said the current thinking in the elite sports is that athletes should act in the way that they consider normal. So it is very different,
it's
because
individual.
Some people, it is that frustration that, you know, you coop up for 2-3 weeks and then suddenly that aggression will take you forward. Yes. Particularly suitable for perhaps, you know, sporting events such as boxing and that sort of things, you know, and judo. And then, but in others, you need to be relaxed, you know. So to continue with that advice from the official line of the, you know, the coach, is that, and not to do something that goes against the belief. Because one of the things that if you it goes against your belief, then you have a lot of guilt. And that guilt is obviously going to be counterproductive because that will induce guilt and that belief, it will pre-competition. It's bad for you, then that will cause you problems.
Are there any other beliefs or superstitions that you have, you think, that aren't necessarily scientific? Because I think so much of, you know, training is very scientific. You eat exactly this much, you train exactly this many hours, you recover for this many hours, and it's all very set in stone because it's science. But are there any things that you personally have that you know it's not really scientific, but you just hold on to them anyway?
That's the stuff about... I think the boys in Malaysia used to talk about the knees going weak.
Yeah, well, it weakens your legs. That's what Rocky said, right? I said that's what Mickey tells Rocky.
So,
well, let me say, you know, the Malaysians say knees going joint jelly, right?
Yeah,
okay, right.
Like
you know,
that.
So, you know, others say that your hands becomes a bit, you know, your palm becomes a bit
I'm
hairy.
Assuming that applies for females also, right?
In
for,
what
for
sense?
Women, as in, you know. I don't know. I'm just asking if that applies, some kind of body reaction that happens.
I don't think it's talked about much at all.
No, in fact, there's a lot of studies to actually look at the physiological responses during, you know, intimacy in men and women. Actually, most of it actually, it's roughly the same. It's the intensity that might be a bit different.
Okay. So personally, I think, there was the World Cup. There was one whole team that said, you know, they shouldn't. They
right,
were banned
okay.
from.
Right, that's Mexico, right? Okay, right. I can tell you what happened to you. In Mexico's team, they announced in 2014 that players should abstain from sexual activities during the World Cup, and then, you know, their partners are completely banned from going out to maximize their athletic performance. The team lost in round 16, as they all eventually, lost out in 1994. In 2014. So that's that. Yes. And then, but yet you have another, team, like, for example, some of those, the Netherlands national soccer teams in 1978, mm-hmm. In World Cup in Argentina. And then, you know, the coach actually asked them to accompany, their wives to accompany them. And then they reckon that that's the reason why they won the second place in that competitions, right? Okay. So it's all, you know, hearsay. You know, one group says this, the other group say it's work for them. So, you know, it's all very conflicting. It's like, you know, even Pele actually confessed that he, you know, never suspended from sexual encounters with his wife before the game because that helps him to relax. So I think it's quite individualized.
Two things I can say about this. when it comes to the stress of competition, I mean, I'm not even Olympic things like that, but the stress that on a the week, the 5 days before, you can't sleep, you can, it's just so high that, you know, I think having intimacy would be good to release, you know, to relax yourself again.
Yeah. I can sense, you know, from one hand you're saying yes is good, the next hand you say yes, no is not good. Okay, I'm going to put you out of misery. What does the sign say? Okay, right, okay. There is a study done in 2000, basically 15 athletes. Okay, admittedly, it's a small study.
It's a very small
very
study.
Very small study. Yeah. So, you know, age between 20 to 40, participating in a two-day experiment. Okay, so what they asked to do is 24 hours before the experiment, they were asked to actually engage in sexual activity. Then the following morning, they actually had a mental test and then to measure concentrations and also a stress test on a bike. And then they repeat the same thing in the afternoon at 4:15. So what they wanted to find out was that whether their vital signs are all changed or not, if they actually have encountered something 24 hours beforehand. The answer is there is absolutely no difference in their concentration at all, and then also their heart rate at all. So, in fact, the morning heart rate is slightly elevated. So they came to a conclusion to say that the refractory period, like our caller said, that, you know, for some people might be actually carried forward to the following day. That might increase their heart rate a little bit, and then that itself might be good or bad for certain people. Okay. So whenever it's heart rate elevation, might mean anxiety, then it's bad. At heart rate elevation might mean kind of aggression, that might be good. So the reality is that there is none. There is no difference in scientific viewpoint. Small study, however, I actually believe that. Yes. I think this is all...
you haven't had patients come back to you and say, you told me it was okay.
To do that. Now I failed my exam. And it's like, that sort of thing, right?
So can we say that it depends on what kind of activity you did the night before then?
Yeah, well...
What type?
Sex is sex, right? Yeah. There are different versions of that, obviously. So. You know, some people are more strenuous than that. You're absolutely right. Yes. Because at the end of the day, we are generalizing that, you know. So that is quite interesting because, you know, in this study, they didn't specify exactly how strenuous or actually measure the kilocalories.
Yeah. And even if they did, we wouldn't have been able to talk about
that's
it.
That's right.
So let's be clear.
Was it like 15 minutes or an
it's
hour?
It's true. So, okay, right. Okay. No. This study, I went through it. It's a small study, just actually defined as an experience, an activity. That's it. You know, nothing elaborated.
So I take the safer way out. I just refrain for the
that's
three
right.
days
safer
before.
That's right.
Well, I have a question for you, Kanan, but we'll get to that after the market update. In the meantime, our phone lines remain open. We're talking today about sex and athletic performance, but really also just sex and stress in some ways. That's the topic of the show. I mean, do you feel that...
it causes more stress or actually causes less stress?
Exactly. Does it relieve stress or does it exacerbate it? Give us a call. That number is 03-77-109000. You can also text 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. You are listening to Health and Living. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me in the studio today, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist and always our doctor in the house. And Kanan Murugasan, Ultraman triathlete and personal trainer, someone who's been working in the fitness industry for quite a while. And he's here because, 450,000 condoms were given out in the Olympic Village. And we wanted to know whether or not the old idea that sex and sports should not mix, whether that has any validity to it at all. And on the line, we have Victor.
Hi, Victor.
Hello.
Hi, Victor.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Have you have a philosophical view about this?
Okay. I do not know what make them say this, but there is another Chinese saying.
All right.
Meaning losing one drop of semen is equivalent to losing 9 drops of blood. So, in other words, sex can be very tiring.
Yeah, well, okay, sacred and need to protect it.
Yeah, but I do not know, I mean, on what basis do they say this? But what I do remember is Graham Souness, who is the former Liverpool Football Club captain.
Mm-hmm.
He always say that before a big match, he always had some fun because that improved his performance, that relaxed him.
Mm.
And he mentioned that, before the FA Cup final, before what match, I was man of the match. And I did this before this. So
yeah.
Who can argue with him?
Yeah. So coming back to your, obviously your Chinese upbringing, do you think that is something that, actually counterproductive for newer generations, because obviously sex education sometimes can be very sensitive and very, taboo to talk about. I mean, what's your view about that yourself?
So I think, it is quite harmful because there are a lot of saying is just based on preconception without any basis, without any clinical trial, any experiment. So I think there are a lot of assumptions in China.
Yeah, I guess everything in moderation, right, Victor?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thanks, Victor.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
I want to talk about women.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think, as so much of the research has focused on men, I think that's fair to say. Even the few studies that have actually tried to examine how sex can improve or impair athletic performance, there have only been about 4, and all of them have been about men. So where did this idea come from that sperm is so important? I'm sorry, but where? No, just tell me.
We didn't say that.
When you describe it, you describe it as the load, right? It's like,
Victor just described it as more valuable than blood.
That's valuable. 9 drops of blood.
Yes.
That's right. Okay, right. Okay.
So I've had it. I just need to know.
Well, the only argument I think is that, one is quantifiable, the other one is not quantifiable, right? Okay, because it is in terms of volume, right? Okay, because at the end of the day, you cannot quantify the experience itself and the intensity and that sort of thing. So therefore, something that can be quantified is this. Right, okay.
I think that's a weak excuse.
It is a weird excuse. It is a weak, very weak excuse.
What about the recovery?
recovery period. Okay. Right, okay, right.
I think there is no recovery period, is it? Or
For women. Well, okay. If you talk about in the scientific viewpoint, there is something called a refractory period. Okay. So, in evolutionary viewpoint, a woman actually can achieve multiple climaxes because there is no refractory period. So, therefore, evolutionarily in the brain, the woman can continue to have that. But for a man, between one to the next, there's an interval, and that is refractory period. And actually, it ends enhances it prolong with advancing age. So when we talk about refractory period, we are really not talking about recovery period, because that relaxation, how long do you last for relaxation, is presumably the recovery period you have in mind. But physical refractory period is almost fixed for every single man and woman.
Okay. Yeah.
I also want to know whether or not women are expected to be as aggressive as men in sports. I mean, so in, for example, endurance sports, are women encouraged to be as aggressive? Because that's the other word we've used a lot in today's show, aggression. The idea that somehow if you hold on to, if you refrain from sexual activity, that you get more aggressive, that you get more frustrated, and maybe that's good.
Before you answer that, what's your view, Lynn?
Course women can be aggressive. What nonsense. Are you not looking at the gold tally of this Olympic Games?
We can sense aggression now, right?
Exactly. Who has taken home the silvers for us? Women.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. So in your experience,
About 2 weeks ago, I was in the magnificent Marapo Trail 100-kilometer run. Our local, I think her name was, I forgot her name, sorry. She beat most of the men for a 100-kilometer run, and she was like leading away. I think she did it in about 14 hours. The winner was about 12 hours. The cutoff time was 20 hours, by the way. So there you go.
Yeah.
So women are encouraged to have that aggression as well?
I think not encouraged, but they want to be aggressive nowadays. Because nowadays.
Right, okay.
I hope I won't get bashed up with this. But, it's good that in some way that they want to be equal. So it sort of improved their performance in athletic performance, which is good, I think. Yeah.
And as do coaches encourage that, in your view?
Oh, definitely, yes, yes. Especially for in cycling. I mean, the Tour de France, we have the females in the Tour de France also, and they go as hard as the guys.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I think
because I'd had enough of hearing about that's how special it is.
Well, partly is because you know when we looked at 1950s, 1960s practices for the Olympics, you know, like for example, coaches give them nitrate salts, you know, potassium nitrate in order to dampen that erection and that sort of thing. It's presumably during that time, the vast majority of the athletes at Olympians were male-dominated. And it's just like in sexual health, you know, the vast majority of the last three decades, it's always talking about male-dominated sexual health. Increasingly, there is that taboo down, the barriers down for us to talk about female sexual health. And in fact, you know, with
and female dominance in sports.
Absolutely, absolutely. That goes without saying. And it is true that, you know, that will slowly come out as a platform. And then it is, but one thing has to be said, like you pointed out, four studies, it's all male orientated and there's no female orientated. Once the taboo and the barriers down, increasingly, there will be studies because there is that need to understand female sexual health equally as male sexual health.
And to close off, I did want to say whether or not this is even worthy of research. I know that we've done a whole show on it, but that's because it is a topic that comes up time and time again. You know, Dr. George, you were just talking about how 4 years ago...
Every 4 years, yeah, there is an article on
it. It's near identical. And so it's a topic that continues to come forth. But the reason it does, I think, is because when it comes to athletics, it seems like the difference between a gold or a silver, a podium finish and a non-podium finish is so small. You know, in some sports, it is a matter of milliseconds. That's the difference. So,
is it worthy of a study? Is what you're searching? I mean, majority of the studies that is being done is on technology of the fabrics, the technology of your sleep studies and that sort of thing. So in fact, you know, what the impact on sexual health on the athletes, I think, is something that probably will have significant, you know, outcome determination. So therefore, I think it's worthy of it because, I mean, everyone spends so much money and energy in order to understand how athlete performs under stress. And that itself can be extrapolated for the general understanding of how people crack or don't or take it with their stride whenever they face challenges and, you know, under pressure.
Kanan, what I wanted to ask you was, mm-hmm. what is it like working for such small gains? Because, you know...
Small gain.
Well, in the sense that in order to win, sometimes you're just shaving off minutes, you're shaving off seconds. You know, it's not like you're working to shave off hours at a time. I guess when you're at an elite level, that becomes the numbers that you're talking about. They seem so small. What is it like for you training and working to do that, you know, to shave off these small, small, small things?
That would not apply for me because on a long distance, I can shave off a lot of hours. It depends on... But I can talk on behalf of the... in the Olympics or... because I've worked with elite athletes before. I've seen them. It makes a lot of difference for that few seconds. So 4 years in a row training and that millisecond. Like, look at Phelps. He's got his 20-second goal. Yes, it is very, very... crucial for that millisecond.
And do you get used to working within that time frame? You know, because for a lot of people, well, I mean, even if we talk about ultra marathons, ultramans, people don't understand, I guess, the scale of time. So as an athlete, what's it like for you working constantly towards making those gains? How do you keep motivated, I guess, is the question.
Okay. Going back again, for me, it's just passion. So that keeps me going. And at the end of the day, it's just the love of the sports of swim, bike, run. And it keeps me going. Again, if you're not loving what you're doing, I don't think you can go far or keep doing it. So at the end of the day, it's also whether you love it or your coach tells you, go out there and just do it because we want the goal. So And that's the difference, I guess.
Oh, it's just like that, Chinese athlete who won bronze actually went viral. It's because suddenly she just went there to do what she enjoyed rather than she do what she's goal-orientated to get what she wanted. And then suddenly they realize that chasing after a dream doesn't have to be that dream. It's chasing after your passion can be that dream.
Happiness.
Yes. Yeah, and that makes it effortless, yes. Really.
And at the end of the day, even if you do improve, even for a half an hour or for a long distance, you know, the joy of, you know, they have the PBs nowadays, personal best and all that, it keeps you going and achieving, and you have something that to look forward for, I guess.
Will you ever stop? Because this is addictive, isn't it?
It is. In fact, I'm waiting for when I'm 80.
For something to kind of break.
When I'm 80, I can be a winner on my age category, because it's kind of hard to win in my age category nowadays. So
you're waiting to beat all the other octogenarians. Yes.
When everyone else is on Zimmer frame and then you are able to beat everyone else. Is that what you have in mind?
See, this is the passion that will keep him going for 40 more years. I will win at 80.
No, you'll win. No. Dr.
Some
may define that as kiasu.
That's marginal gain. Yeah.
You have 30 seconds. Okay. What would you like to leave us with?
450,000 condoms? There must be a lot of fun in Rio. I want to be there.
Well,
that's my final word.
Don't we all?
That's right.
Canon, any thoughts?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's just guessing that it's used after the event, personally, I think.
So that's when the park is going down.
Yes.
Okay, right. So we want to be there afterwards as well. Right.
I've been speaking today with Dr. George Lee and Canon Murugasan, and we've been discussing the links between sex and athletic performance. You've been listening to Health and Living, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.